New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, we are back on the Double G Show, another simulcast between BSPN Media and Fight Game Media. We're talking Tyson and Jake Paul here with Carlos Toro. What's up, man?
Doing good, doing good. Hopefully, the stream quality of this is better than tonight has been. I will say, listen, I will consider that I got the Ethernet cable plugged in. There shouldn't be any issue on my end. As right. for the server, well, you know, that's not.
It is it's absolutely 100% on their end. I have been there in that situation, so I'll just give you a quick backstory. My company, we were doing a, we were getting some coverage on. 2020 or some old school show from 10 years ago. And you know, when you're in those moments, you're expecting, okay, how much server, how much traffic are we expecting? How many hits are we going to get to the website? And so you kind of, you know, you pre-plan. And Netflix, they could do all the pre-planning that they want, but they've never been in these shoes before. And they're going to be in these shoes again come the NFL game, the Christmas game. So this was almost like a test for the Christmas game, but you can sort of guess and you don't really know. It's unexpected. Things happen. Something could screw up. And yeah, for a lot of people, they went down. To have that test on the biggest event that you've ever put on is probably not the greatest, though. I think because of Netflix having such equity in households, it's probably not that big of a problem. But as they veer more into live programming, this is something that they'll get better at. Like Amazon, I don't know if you watch Thursday Night Football on Amazon, but the first year that they did it, they definitely had some problems keeping the stream up. But now it's like seamless. Like it's almost like watching cable television. So Netflix has to get through those repetitions in order to get there. They're just not there yet.
Yeah, and you know, and there really is no way to like stress this. They've done live broadcasts before. They did a I think it was a Carlos Alcaraz tennis match, if I remember correctly, not like earlier this year, but mm-hmm. like, you know, the audience for that is like a small fraction of what tonight was going to be. I mean, like there's practically no event outside from the NFL game that's going to be anywhere near the audience that this is going to reach. Now the big question is going to be like, what is going to be the number? And you and I both know, I mean, they're going to give us whatever number is, looks most impressive. Whether it's like the amount of like the unique viewers in there, or like what is like the peak viewership, whatever that looks best for the stockholders, like that's going to be the number that's going to come out.
That is most important for, you know, the ability to hold the show, but then what is the outcome? What is the marketing going to be after this? What is the stock price going to look like on Monday because of this? Are you going to say, look at how many people came? Are you going to say we didn't hold the traffic quite well? I don't know. You know, you did not say that, obviously. But yeah, that's a big part of this. And that's why they did it. They did it. So actually, let me pull back. The reason they did it is because they're trying to sell an ads tier. And so if you give the lowest possible amount of money to subscribe, it's going to be the ads tier. They want to build up their ads tier so they can serve ads to members. I probably pay like, I don't know, between 15 and 20 bucks a month because I don't want ads, but they make more money on the $7.99 member who's got to sit through ads before they watch and during the middle of their shows. So that is the service that they're trying to provide. And I'm sure they got a lot of $7.99 subscribers today. So, you know, from the experiment standpoint, which is what I was most interested in, I thought, you know, on my end, my thing held up fine. I had a little bit of pixelation at one point, but everything was smooth sailing for me. But I know that not everyone was like me. But from the whole presentation standpoint of putting on a live event, this felt very much like a normal boxing pay-per-view, which I'm not sure was the right way to go if I'm Netflix. We'll talk about the Tyson fight in a second, though there's not really much to say. But what did you think about it overall? If you are, you know, you've sat through pay-per-views, you sit through DAZN shows every week where there's lots of downtime. But, you know, if you, I don't know if people talk to you like, hey, Carlos, like, I don't watch boxing. I know you're a big boxing guy. What do you think? Like, how do you think those people dealt with the downtime?
You know, it's funny because, like, a lot of times when they were, you know, a lot of the casual people that are watching the fight, they're probably not watching it by themselves. It's probably in a watch party setting. So, my buddy
Larry Caution said he was at a party of 30 people. This was like the old days of boxing pay-per-view.
Yeah, where everybody, you know, someone buys in the pay-per-view and everybody chips in like $2-3 to kind of lessen the blow of the person who has to ultimately pay the whole thing. It's really weird because from the casual standpoint, you know, obviously the big draw was Tyson Paul, and like the downtime, I want to say that it was a little bit excessive. I'm going to be honest. It was, you know, you had a women's title fight that did 30 minutes and that was, you know, from in-ring time, including in between rounds, 30 minutes. And then you had a sixth rounder, which it's not even worth acknowledging because that fight was awful. That fight was terrible.
Are you talking about the early fights you're talking about?
Yes, the first one, the Neeraj Goyat fight, which was terrible. It was an awful, awful opener, like the worst possible fight you can put on as your opener for that show. But then there was a lot of like downtime and they really treated it. It felt a lot to me that this was just kind of PBC light. Yeah. In terms of presentation, where in between fights you get, you know, maybe you get a celebrity, you get Lennox Lewis in there, you get another big name fighter as a talking head. It's just, you know, it was PBC light in presentation, AEW light in terms of production quality and sometimes misses. Oh my God. Well, let's be honest. If it is absolutely hilarious that the one of the two times where someone had audio issues, it was with Jerry Jones. That is absolutely, like, if that's not a microcosm for how Jerry's the last 5 months of Jerry's life has been, I don't know what is.
The other issue was they had a table with Kate Scott. Yes. And I'm going to throw, some of my old people are going to give me a thumbs up. She reminded me of the old MTV VJ, Downtown Julie Brown. Very charismatic, very charming. I thought she did a great job. And they had a table with her, Andre Ward, Lennox Lewis, and Evander Holyfield. Not only did Evander Holyfield's mic not work, but his earpiece didn't work.
He couldn't hear anything or speak. Lennox Lewis was the one with basically was the messenger.
He was the translator. But the problem was Kate Scott would ask Evander a question and Lennox was sitting next to Evander. So she'd say, Lennox, can you just translate that to Evander for me? And then Lennox would say, and she's like, that's not what I asked. What are you doing? And
so like the old game of telephone things.
Yeah. Oh, he's also trolling a little bit, right? He's talking about ear biting and stuff. And Evander's like, he's making Evander a little uncomfortable. So from that standpoint, you know, cause I thought about, wow, you know, the thing about my parents have sat through big boxing events, so this will be nothing new to them. But, you know, I was thinking of other people who maybe, you know, I thought this would be a good opportunity for Netflix to do something Netflixy about this show, whether it be, you know, you're working with WWE, you could have had WWE people help out in, what do you do during the downtime? Well, we're introducing Raw. You could have had more people from the Netflix catalog. There's a Love is Blind, show that had just finished. You could have had those folks there. You could have had them do some stuff to introduce things about boxing or about the shows. It could have been a little bit more of like a marketing vehicle for Netflix in that way. I think that would have been better than the downtime. The thing that I would decided to do in the downtime is I didn't want to get out of the feed because I didn't want to not be able to get back into the feed. So I just went on my computer and I was like, oh, I got to catch up on this Warriors game. And so I was trying to watch the Warriors and I had the thing in the background or, okay, now I'm going to go talk to my wife because I sort of left her for the night to watch the show. And then we would talk a little bit. Then I got to come back downstairs for the ring walk. So for me, the downtime wasn't that big of a deal, but I also understood it. I'm just more thinking like the people who didn't really know it, like, you know, and we see this in wrestling pay-per-views and that sometimes WWE, because they're on Peacock, they do these long breaks between matches, which are actually commercials for their commercial audience, but AEW doing a pay-per-view, they don't have commercials. So they just go match, boom, ends, match, boom, ends. And that's not what this was going to be, though, because of the short fights, they could have. But then again, I'm sure after every fight, they were just trying to test the connection and making sure they had enough traffic coming in and not getting blocked. So that was also probably part of the delays. Okay, let's get to the fight. Kind of what we thought the last time we talked, when we talked about Tyson. I mean, personally, I'm glad that Tyson did not end up, you know, sitting on his stool and not coming out or get knocked down or get knocked out. That'd have been the worst thing for my heart. But at the same time, for the people who bought the fight, I don't know. I kind of wonder if they would have wanted to see Jake press the action a little bit more. It did seem like maybe, I don't know if there was a handshake agreement or maybe Jake just did not want to be the bad guy. But there were opportunities for him to charge in at Tyson and take advantage of him. And he just didn't. And he just like was just fine staying away, fine using his jab. You know, that ring was so big for Tyson because he just couldn't move. He could move side to side a little bit. He couldn't move front and back, forward and back. And because Jake is younger and he's faster and he's got quicker reflexes, he could just see Mike coming. I think Mike hit, what did Mike land? You think Mike landed two clean shots in that fight?
Yeah. I think he landed two clean shots in the first round, or at least he landed one in the first round. I know for a fact. So he landed some good shots, which it's kind of, I mean, we all kind of expected how it was going to go. You know, yeah. Mike was going to come out swinging first couple of rounds, land some good shots because Jake still hadn't gotten into a good rhythm, or has not gotten a good sense of Mike's speed and his agility and his hand speed at that age. And then once he kind of figured that out, okay, he's this fast or he's this slow, then, you know, it was off to the races. It was literally, let's be honest. Stamina was never Tyson's strong suit, even in his prime. It was never his strong suit. And that in his prime was 40 years. It was almost 40 years ago. Like, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's almost in his 60s. I mean, you know, Jake played it about as well as anyone could would have expected. You know, the pole point was working on his stamina. And, you know, even on the countdown show made a big point that the one thing they wanted to add to Jake's repertoire was cardio.
Yeah,
because they knew that if this went the distance, Jake was going to have a significantly bigger chance of winning the fight because Mike just doesn't have it to go 8 rounds, even on 2-minute rounds. So
the worry, you know, I think the worry for me, the countdown special, by the way, I thought was awesome. It was like one of the best hype jobs I've seen in quite some time. I'm like, man, I hope our pro wrestling brethren, you know, I hope the people at AEW watched that show because I was like, man, there are unique tactics in there to promote and to utilize that they could do for their shows. But one of the things I worried about, and I'll circle back a little bit to a tweet that I made this morning. I made a for fun tweet about how in 2006, a 60 or a 59-year-old Rocky Balboa faced Mason the Lion Dixon and took him to took him the distance. And so, you know, I made that funny joke. But there's a part in that movie where they're doing training and Duke tells Rocky, he's like, you got calcium deposits in your neck, so yeah, we're not going to be able to do this. And you got arthritis. So sparring is out of, sparring is out of the question. Yeah. And I was thinking about that because I was like, okay, how much sparring is Mike able to do? And then at the end of the fight, he basically admitted that he had some sort of leg injury, but you know, that it's not, it wasn't the reason he lost, but it, you did sense that something was going on in there. And he got old, you know, he was old, and you know, he felt the punches, and he just knew he wasn't going to be able to catch Paul. And if you watched Mike Tyson's career like I did, the fighters who gave him the most trouble were the longer guys who could jab and who could keep him from a distance and who could frustrate him, because Mike Tyson's entire game was being able to get inside to, you know, throw the overhand right, throw the uppercuts. And if you didn't let him do that because you used your jab and you kept him away, Buster Douglas, Lennox Lewis, Donovan Razor Ruddock, though Tyson was able to beat Ruddock, you know, I think Riddick Bowe would have gave Tyson very similar problems. Evander Holyfield, beat him in a different way, just kind of out toughed him. But like, that's how Tyson lost in his prime. So Jake Paul knew what the blueprint was, obviously. I just was wondering if he was going to attempt, you know, Netflix paid these guys a lot of money. I kind of wonder, what would it take for Netflix to be in the Jake Paul business? What would they have wanted? Would they have wanted to see a knockout, or would they wanted to see, would they have wanted to see something like what we saw tonight?
I think honestly, ultimately, I think a Jake win by most means would have been enough. Cause it's kind of the problem. Cause like, if we're talking about like, what is like the public perception around Jake? Okay. Let's say he knocks Mike Tyson out. He knocked out an old man. And then he, you know, if the fight went the way it did, you know, well, you know, some people will make excuses like, well, he couldn't handle facing Mike, you know, up close in battle. He has to constantly jab and move out of the way, didn't want to actually engage. It was kind of a loose situation.
That's what Andre was saying before the fight started, too.
It was a loose situation as far as like boxing people's perspective towards Mike. So, you know, if Netflix is going to enter into the boxing business for real, or at the very least into the Jake Paul boxing business, you know, they have, there's no way, especially with TKO kind of being on board, there's no way that Netflix doesn't understand what is going to be kind of like, what is right. The public perception around Jake in the fight. Like, they can't just be thinking like, oh, well, he just brings in a lot of viewers without really taking a look at a boxing nuance of things. Now, obviously, if Jake had lost, completely different story, Netflix would probably thinking like, we're not really that interested, or we're still interested, but we're not going to pay nearly as much money as we normally would, because, you know, his star power has significantly dropped down in that instance. And, you know, Jake can't handle another loss like he did with Tommy Fury. You know, right. It's a miracle. Honestly, it's a miracle that Jake was able to garner an attention-grabbing fight like this with Mike Tyson, but only because it's Mike Tyson.
Right.
If Jake had lost, you know, there's not another Mike Tyson. Like, right. Hell, you can bring Floyd for an exhibition fight. It wouldn't be. Well, first of all, we technically kind of saw that
with Logan,
and that fight sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. My buddy, the pro wrestling Joker, said, I thought Joker 2 was the worst thing I saw this year. I was wrong. And this is a guy who actually won money on his bet, so he should be happy. And I kind of said, you know, well, it's kind of like what we expected, right? But you raise a great point. And so I also raised this on Twitter. I know everyone's moving to Blue Sky, but Twitter was still kind of the place for me to be tonight if I wanted to engage with folks. Blue Sky hopefully will be good as well with that. But I posed this. I said, okay, let's say Jake wins, and let's say Netflix is happy with the business that MVP, or most valuable promotions, or whatever they call it. They're happy with the whole thing, and they're like, okay, we want to do this again. But we don't want some, you know, number 12th ranked, you know, light heavyweight contender. Like, we want another one of these kind of things. What is going to draw engagement? What is going to draw attention? What can we do another countdown show with Ice-T narrating? And who would be on that list, do you think? Now, I'll tell you the ones that I threw out. So you mentioned Floyd. I just threw out Floyd just because Floyd still has a name.
And he's still doing the odd exhibitions.
It would not be a good fight at all, because Floyd
wouldn't even be a real fight. Wouldn't even be sanctioned.
Yeah, and Floyd is, if he did not want Jake Paul to hit him, Jake Paul would not hit him. Mm-hmm. Now, if Jake Paul did hit him, there's a giant size difference, so they'd have to do something with the weight. But I threw out, you're gonna love this one. My number one on my list would be none other than Oscar De La Hoya.
Mm. See, I know you did mention Oscar, and honestly, if this was 3 years ago, it actually would have been a really good fight to do. Because like, Oscar was legitimately getting in shape to make a quote unquote comeback, which fizzled and nothing ever actually happened. Now, I mean, I guess that is, I mean, you could do that, but
51 years old, by the way. So
and I'm willing to bet that it's going to take a lot of effort to get him into shape that Mike was in. Because like, yeah, Mike was 58 years old, but he was in really good shape. He was in really, really good shape. It's just that
I don't imagine that this was drug tested, by the way. So I'm sure Mike was able to use whatever he needed to recover, to feel better about himself, to be able to lift all those weights he was lifting. I'm sure he had help 100%.
Look, it's the Texas Commission. It's the Wild Wild West. I mean, like, anything goes in when it comes to it. It's funny because, like, I actually don't know if you know this. This is not even the first time this decade that Texas has allowed a man in his 50s who has not boxed professionally in decades to fight professionally, and it was in that instance also happened with the old guy losing. So, anything goes when it comes to what Texas will allow and won't allow, which is very bizarre.
Right. Another person on my list. Now they would have to create some sort of frustration with each other, but he's got a brother who has a pretty large following. The what made me think of this was there was a promotion, gosh, this had to be 10 or 15 years ago as well. Frank Shamrock and Ken Shamrock,
yes,
were building up to do an MMA fight. I forgot what the tagline was, blood something or blood brothers, or because they're not even, they're not blood related, but it was something like that. And I thought, wow, this is fascinating. Like, I can't even imagine being that mad at one of my friends to want to fight them. And now you're talking about someone who, you know, you share a last name with. Logan Paul versus Jake Paul would be high on my list. And the other person that I can think of, though, he is signed to the UFC, so he could not just do the fight, is Conor McGregor. But there are two people that I would absolutely stay away from if I was Jake Paul. One of them was at the desk. The man's name was Andre Ward.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, you could probably get a lot of money to get Andre to put the trunks back on, but Andre would, like, he would destroy Jake.
Yeah. I don't think Jake would want to fight Andre Ward.
No.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't even be exciting. It would be a dressing down. Mm-hmm. Boxing style, boxing skill wise.
Yeah.
And the other person I would stay away from, just because he's way too big, is Francis Ngannou, former UFC fighter who fought Anthony Joshua and also fought Tyson Fury,
who looked phenomenal in his last fight. I mean, ooh, man, what a PFL debut. What a PFL debut.
So those are folks who were on my list and on my, you know, don't call list. Is there who else? Someone had mentioned in my mentions, Tito Trinidad. I think Tito Trinidad probably is like twice the size that he was from what we remember him, right?
Yeah, Tito Trinidad. It's
also 51.
He's not. I don't think he has really any desire to be in any of that. I think he's happily retired. Not really concerned about that.
B-Hop is older than Mike Tyson, by the way, so it can't be B-Hop.
It can't be B-Hop, and they even like try to see like, hey Bernard, you ever think about maybe going back in the ring? And Bernard was like, not for me. I don't want to do it. And they got into the same thing to Lennox, and Lennox was like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Also, Roy Jones, 55. We saw Roy Jones against Tyson.
Roy would be crazy enough to still do it. Roy would be crazy enough to do it, even at this age.
Mason the Line Dixon himself, 55, though I haven't heard Tarver's name in a long time.
Yeah, no. Last I heard, I think maybe he like did commentary for like a club show a couple of years ago. I don't know.
The one that everyone is going to talk about is Canelo, but Canelo is going to do a fight like that for his own company. He's going to have the A side completely. It's going to be all on his terms. Jake is going to be such a non-factor to Canelo. It won't happen because of those reasons. So
and also Canelo wouldn't even entertain the idea. Canelo is definitely one of those guys in boxing where if he says, I don't like you, screw off, I don't want to do any deal with you at all, he sticks to that. I mean, like, one of the most iconic moments of Canelo's career was when was after the fight with, I'm trying to remember which one. I think it was Callum Smith. The fight after Callum Smith in the press conference, Demetrius Andre comes in and is like, hey, like, tries to call Canelo out. And part of my language, but Canelo just said, like, in English, fuck off, fuck up. And like one of the first times we ever hear Canelo speak English in public, it's just saying that to Demetrius Andre. And like, that is the one guy that Canelo doesn't even acknowledge. So, and he's kind of in that same boat with Jake. So I don't think for that reason it's going to happen.
Could Manny get to 170 at 45 years old?
170, no. I think maybe like high 150s.
Yeah,
I think high 150s.
Too small.
Yeah, he's like, people forget, like, when Manny started fighting professionally, I mean, granted, he was a teenager, he was like 110 pounds, 112 pounds.
Yeah,
108 pounds. Like,
he did the Amanda Serrano diet of having to come up so many times.
literally, it's, you know, Amanda's maybe the only fighter right now in MMA and in boxing active that it can, like, she's champion 126, I'm gonna go 140. No, she lost, all right, I'm still champion 126, she's gonna go back down to 126. She's not gonna have any problem making that weight or have it affect her in any way, shape, or form. Like, she is maybe the most disciplined fighter in the world when it comes to managing the weight.
New year, same great savings, all in the Kroger app. Get Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's going to be so many discussions off of this Netflix show. But what did you think about when Tyson said this might not be it? Like, what could possibly be out there for this dude?
I really don't know. I'm just like, who Mike should have had in his corner? In that last round, should have Paulie, and just say like,
Paulie died though.
I know, but like, he should. But like, in a perfect world, Burt Young would have been in there and just said, "This is the last round of your life, Mike. This is the last round of your life."
Yeah,
it's like, what do you do after? Like, this isn't there's no boxing equivalent of the big three where you can just have retired guys play a game of 3-on-3 in Ice Cube's league. There's no, right. You can't have a boxing equivalent of that.
Yeah. And if you did, you'd really want them to wear headgear. You'd want them to fight, you know, 3-round fight I mean, at least they did 8 rounds, 2 minutes. So, you know, that and it sounds like that was what Mike was interested in doing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. The other thing is that after this fight, the only people that will pay him to do other stuff are con men, like just people that
you wouldn't
want to trust. Like Netflix is not coming back to Mike and saying, hey, we want to see you in Holyfield again. Though maybe that's what he's thinking of. But if I was Mike, I wouldn't mess with Holyfield, because Holyfield was the kryptonite for him every single time. Like that's just not the dude to mess with.
Yeah.
Even as bad as Holyfield looked against Vitor Belfort.
Oh God, don't even remind me.
All right, no. So let's talk about the amazing semi-main event, Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor. I didn't actually score the fight. I went back through my notes and I was like, okay, I could sort of see 5-5, but if you take away that point, then Serrano still wins. How do we get to Katie Taylor winning on all three cards by 1 point, even after the point deduction?
Yeah, I mean, I cannot see 6 rounds for Katie. I can't. Like in the first fight, which was also fantastic, kind of equally as controversial. In that one, you can kind of envision a scenario where you have at least 2 judges say Katie Taylor won at least 6 rounds. You can envision a scenario. But in this one, the knock from the first fight was that Amanda started too slow, and it wasn't until like the 5th round where she really started to get way, you know, way more active. Now, in this one, different story. Amanda was attacking from the very beginning of the fight, and not only that, she was winning rounds, and it wasn't like she was being more aggressive, but it was still 50-50. She was winning rounds. The big kicker in this one is that Katie got docked a point.
Yes.
And for 10-round fights, as close as this fight was, where Amanda threw more, landed more, was more accurate, was the aggressor, and she wasn't even showing that much sign, that many signs of weakness after she got like that hellacious cut that just kept getting progressively worse and worse throughout the fight. Like, you can't really look at that fight and say, no, 6 rounds for Katie. Yep, definitely. Like, I can see maybe, I know there's a few rounds for sure that Katie definitely won. And you can kind of argue maybe the 10th round. I know Sean Wheelock gave the 10th round to Amanda Serrano. You can argue that 10th round you could give it to Katie Taylor, because she landed some big shots, especially at the very end in the last 5 seconds. She landed a couple of really good clean shots with Amanda in the corner. But like, you get that 10th round to Katie. Great. It's a 95-94 card for Amanda. So it's really, really bizarre. It's a shame, because this is a rivalry that deserves a rubber match. It's not. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Eddie is going to tell Katie, get the hell away out of Amanda. Let's get out of the Amanda business. Let's just keep extending your career and your title reign, because fighting Amanda Serrano doesn't lengthen careers. It shortens them.
So for the second time in a row, Serrano clearly landed more shots. According to the Final Punch stats, 324 landed to 217 for Katie. So 30% more. And then she had a higher volume. She threw over 200 more punches, and her percentage was higher. I thought the most interesting thing in this fight, I don't know how strategic this was, how accidental it was, but the second that cut happened on the clashing of the heads, I sensed that Katie saw that as an in, because what she was able to do, and this is a little bit more strategic than most people probably even like are thinking about, especially if you're not a diehard boxing fan. I don't know if you noticed this, but when she would get inside, she would lean her head right sort of in the cheek. And so if Amanda moved towards Katie's head, she knew she was going to hit her eye on Katie's head. So it's almost like you made sure that Amanda's head was staying in the place that you wanted it to be able to throw a punch, which was very smart. But at the same time, you had Amanda's coaches calling it dirty. I guess it could, it probably was dirt. You're taking advantage of a headbutt by, you know, making sure that she knows that they could butt heads again. So she's going to be tentative about moving her head in that direction. But once she sort of smelled blood and she kind of attacked even the eye with punches, and it seemed to light a fire under her. There were moments where she was just throwing punch after punch after punch, and both fighters had tremendous output. The problem with Katie Taylor is always she doesn't have a lot of power, because right. She was hitting Amanda Serrano flush, and Amanda Serrano was just walking through it. It made for a great fight. It made for a phone booth fight. I loved it. But if you are scoring that fight, power has to be involved in how you score the fight. And the fact that Katie couldn't really push Amanda back, even late, I thought that should have been like the dominating factor in the scoring, is that, okay, if everything is equal, Serrano's punches had clearly more power. And to me, that would have been the thing. But I don't know, that the way that it was scored, it seemed like they very clearly gave Taylor those last several rounds in order to give her the victory.
And also, Amanda was also the aggressor. She was, yes. she was the aggressor, and it wasn't like the kind of aggression where she was chasing Katie and Katie was just fighting backwards. No, Amanda was hunting her. She was cutting off the ring. Like, she cornered Katie a couple of times. Granted, Katie also did the same thing, but that was like later in the fight. But for the most part, it was Amanda that was being the aggressor.
Yeah. Yep. Do you sense that if you don't believe that they're running this back, what can they do with Amanda Serrano? Because this was clearly the fight that, you know, there was this whole story about both women making over $1 million for the fight. But in that same story that I read by Andreas Hale on ESPN, like, it is not the norm. Like, most of these title fights in the women's divisions are, you know, they're making like $20,000 to $40,000. This was great. This was a pioneering fight, but it doesn't seem like women's boxing is going this route. Sort of the opposite of the WNBA, right? The WNBA is growing so much in popularity, but women's boxing still seems to be stuck even after this incredible fight. I'm trying to figure out where's the moment, what is going to take it up a level from where it's at. Who does Amanda have left? Who does Katie have next to kind of create these super fights again? It doesn't seem like there's that many women out there who would fit that bill.
My immediate thought is, and this is where Eddie Hearn is gonna be elated, is the fact that there is at least one good fight for both of these women in the respective weight classes. Amanda's still champion at featherweight, and Katie's, you know, the number one fighter at 140. So for Katie, there's Chantel Cameron, who is the interim title holder for the WBC. And there is a, you know, there's a natural rivalry because, you know, they've fought each other twice already, and both of them were very disputed decisions. Although the first one ended a majority decision, but I think the consensus is, and I agree, that Chantel Cameron won. Katie won the second fight, and people thought, well, hold on, maybe Katie didn't really earn that one. So obviously, that's the rubber match. That is definitely at least one for Katie. That it's a major, major fight in the UK and in Ireland. You can definitely do. For Amanda Serrano, there's Sky Nicholson, who is promoted by Eddie Hearn, where, you know, Sky holds the WBC title, Amanda holds the WBO title at featherweight. That is a fight that has been, that Sky and Eddie Hearn have been pushing for a good while. Eddie has been slowly building Sky up for this big fight. And, you know, that's another fight that can absolutely, I think you put that fight in the Garden. I honestly think it's going to draw a good crowd, especially now, even in a loss, Amanda's going to garner so much goodwill from the boxing folk.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you have, you know, you do that, you know, for example, in the Garden, where you have a major Puerto Rican boxing fan base there that's going to support her. You know, it's going to do, I think it would do good numbers. So at least in the short term, there are fights for both of these women. May not be the rubber match between each other, but at least there are still some good fights for them.
Yeah, and you would hope with just with as many people who are watching tonight, they do latch on to Amanda and Katie. And so that is also part of the marketing. Like, I'm sure Amanda Serrano's social media is awesome. I'm not quite as sure about Katie Taylor's, but how do you take all the visibility, the newfound visibility, and then turn it into new fans and keep those fans going with you to what you do next? Because your next fight is not going to be on Netflix. Your next fight is going to be on DAZN, or it's going to be on a pay-per-view or something. So how do you take, and that's part of the problem with this boxing ecosystem, is people are going to be like, oh yeah, how do I watch her fight again? And then they're not going to know. And then they're going to be like, okay, what's DAZN? And why do I have to pay $30 a month to watch DAZN? Or what is this Amazon Prime pay-per-view? Like, how do I do, like, so it's really confusing. And so I hope that there's a pathway to in the marketing to be like, this is the plan. Someone asked a question, how important is Serrano for the Jake Paul undercard? And I think they mean tonight. Tonight was really more about Paul doing good for the women in giving them the visibility. And what they also needed, though, and this is where Serrano and Katie Taylor were really good for this show, is they needed a real fight, because we knew what Jake and Mike was going to be. Mm-hmm. And so you made sure that you had a real fight. And thankfully for them, you had one of the greatest fights of the year. And then even on the fight right before with Barrios, he escaped with a draw. But that was a crazy action fight as well. So if you hopped into Netflix and were like, oh yeah, I don't know who these guys are, but this is actually great. And then you got to Serrano and Katie and you're like, wow, this was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It was time well spent. Even if you didn't like my guy, the pro wrestling Joker, even if you didn't like what you saw in the main event, I don't imagine most people did, but you know, that's a lot of times that's how these things work, right? You come for the main event or the marketing that drew you, and then you're hopeful that something else underneath, you know, it reminds me of
right.
is the UFC when they went on Fox and they had their first show on Fox proper. The main event, or the only match on that show, was Junior Dos Santos against Cain Velasquez. And I from what I remember, it was like a very short fight. And the talk of that whole thing was like, okay, or what are they going to put on the undercard? Because they're going to have all these brand new eyeballs, and you could put an action fight underneath it, and then at least there's a supporting fight if the main event isn't like a great fight. But they didn't do that. They just did the main event. And in this case, it was the opposite. They showcased two great women fighting on the undercard of a disappointing main event. So they did it the other way, and I thought it worked really well. The only thing I'm just going to hammer them about this is just the length of the delay between the fights. Like, if they are to get into this business and they figure out how to make money in boxing, that's something that we don't need. We're yeah. there. We're in. We're subscribers. Like, you should want to make people feel like they're not wasting time versus they are wasting time, I think.
Right.
All right. I always like to ask you this, which is what is next? Like, we come off this crazy marketing event, which is it is for Netflix, but I'm sure there are some folks who are old boxing fans who had a chance to kind of come in, and maybe they did like the women's fight, and maybe they are like, oh, I kind of want to get back into this. What's the next big thing in boxing that you think might get people to pay attention?
I'm trying to, like, okay, so I believe, and I don't want to say like this is breaking news and stuff, but I want to be sure at home, because this is a big fight that I swear I thought I saw was announced. And it was a fight that we kind of have talked about for a while, but kind of want to make sure. Like, don't kind of miss it. It was a, I guess the, yes, okay. So David Benavidez versus David Morrell on February 1st in T-Mobile. Fantastic fight. It's Brandon Figueroa versus Stephen Fulton 2, which the first fight was absolutely incredible. Pitbull Cruz versus Angel Fierro, which has potential to be really fun. Jesus Ramos versus Jason Rosario. A lot of fireworks. It was really, really a lot of fireworks between the two of them. Someone's going to get knocked out because both of those guys are on their last legs in terms of their career. Well, not Ramos. Jason Rosario for sure. But yeah, there's a... Yeah, but that's kind of way later into the future. We're kind of entering that period where, you know, the fights are going to slow down just a little bit. But I know in December 7th on ESPN, and I'm just looking at schedules right here, Emmanuel Navarrete versus Oscar Valdez in a rematch for Navarrete's super featherweight title. First fight was pretty good. It was pretty action packed.
Is that an ESPN Plus fight?
ESPN and ESPN Plus.
Okay.
Yeah, the rare double stream broadcast thing. Rafael Espinosa versus Robeci Ramirez, which is another rematch. First one was surprising. It was really explosive. Espinosa beat Ramirez, and like, it was a very hard hitting fight. That's a good doubleheader, if you ask me. That's a pretty good doubleheader. Leon Paro versus Richardson Hitchens, I think on that same day in Puerto Rico on the Zone. Paro beat Subriel Matias, who up earlier this year and before then, Subriel Matias was essentially the boogeyman at 140 pounds, and Paro just completely decimated him. So Paro is going to be defending his title against Richardson Hitchens, who is one of Eddie Hearn's big signings from, I think, last year, who was actually a Floyd Mayweather guy before that. He actually came up, started being promoted by Floyd. And Floyd kind of let him go, and he went to Eddie Hearn, which has been a really good, and he's been finally getting that world title shot he's been aiming for. And then, obviously, there is Naoya Inoue on Christmas Eve, I believe, defending his undisputed titles at Super Bantamweight against Sam Goodman. Naoya Inoue, I mean, what more can I say that I haven't already said for months and months doing these shows with you? Inoue is an absolute must-see television. And then Tyson versus Usyk. It's, you know...
Are we secure in that fight happening? Everything's been on the straightforward and no bad news
so far. Okay, that's probably the best way I can say it. No bad news for now. No bad news. We're about 6 weeks away. It's December 21st, if I remember correctly. 6 weeks away. Let's just hope that Tyson doesn't have like bad stuffing on his turkey or something.
Yeah. These poor guys, can you imagine having to train, like, and then Thanksgiving is, like, coming?
Yeah, oh, my God.
what are the plans for Joshua coming out of the Dubois fight? Have you heard anything about what they're going to do? I mean, because how many times can you kind of do the reclamation of Anthony Joshua?
He's been playing very coy. He's been like weirdly teasing, like, man, you guys aren't going to believe this opponent that I got coming up. You guys are not going to believe it. And like, we're just have not heard anything concrete. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to psych people out or hype people up about him coming back so soon. But honestly, nothing yet.
And then so I guess what, Canelo's going to fight in May?
Seems to be, you know, on the traditional Canelo schedule, May and September. So far, nothing as far as a potential opponent.
Other than, like, Benavidez is just out, like.
Yeah, it can't be Benavidez because he's fighting Morrell in May. So at this point, I don't know. That's a really interesting question. Because I don't know. I don't think he's gonna go to 175. I don't think so. So, it'll be interesting to see what they. It's possible. Maybe they. It's possible they may have, Canelo, just fight a mandatory, or have someone to or fight someone to try to fulfill a mandatory, so that doesn't come back to bite him, later down the line.
And then I guess the last one I want to ask you about was Terrence Crawford. What's the word on when he fights next?
Still nothing yet. I think I want to say Crawford is still kind of waiting. It's still kind of waiting to see a little bit how the 154 kind of develops, because it's kind of been a bit of a free for all in the sense that like so much stuff has happened. I mean, Tim Tszyu just got beat real bad lately. And yeah. I think Crawford was kind of thinking like that's a potential fight. Not anymore.
That was that Amazon on card that you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it yeah, it's still nothing. Yeah, yeah, so nothing from Crawford. So like, and listen, and that's part of the problem with waiting to see how 154 kind of develops. It's never going to stop developing. Yeah. It's one of the craziest divisions in the sport because there's constant upsets and the paradigm just keeps shifting and shifting and shifting. I mean, for years, Jermell Charlo was the number one guy in the division. Still, he still lost. He still suffered a loss to Tony Harrison a few years back. So, you know, we'll just wait to see. It's possible Crawford may take like a little backup plan, like a smaller fight in the interim until he gets like the bigger fights. I think he also might be waiting to see just how Errol Spence looks in his in the eventual first fight back to see kind of how everything is going with Sebastian Fundora.
All right, appreciate you hanging out here. I'm glad that we were able to chat after this event. Is how I guess I can call it. It was an event. It was kind of like a water cooler kind of thing. I heard more people asking me about my thoughts or my just questions about what was going to happen or just the fight in general than I have about any fight in like a really, really long time, which a little sad, I guess, in a way. But
yeah, a little bit, because it would have to be this. But I'm glad that at the very least we saw some great fights with Mario Barrios and Abel Ramos and Cerrone Taylor. Those were two great fights. Like, it's fantastic. It's really, really good.
Yeah. Maybe we can talk sometime around Usyk Fury. That would be great. But that is around the holiday time frame. So we'll figure out what to do. The 21st is technically when it's scheduled for. So that would be a nice one to come around to do if we are available. So
yeah, and also before we kind of head out, because I do have to get out in a couple of minutes, but I also kind of want to take a minute, because like we talk about the passing of our friend Robert Silva.
Right, right. Who, I did promise that.
Yeah, and you know, Robert Silva was a dear friend of us. You know, he was my podcast co-host on the Fight Game Medium Network for quite some time. And it's
did you really guys do a year on that show?
God, you know, it's funny. I was trying to think about that. I want to say no, but this was in. Straight during the pandemic, and yeah. Relatively early goings of the pandemic, where my sense of time was just out of it. It was like whack. I mean, it still kind of is. It still kind of is. But man, it like we had a lot of really fun memories doing the show. I want to like he is one of the few people that has like this encyclopedic knowledge of the sport that he can just pull out of nowhere immediately. You know, talk about like he'll just pull like drop like I don't know Mark Two Sharp Johnson like out of nowhere, and he'll go at length talking about it. I remember my favorite moment in the show was we were talking about Edgar Berlanga after one of his fights, and I made a reference, and it's like he's a big home run swinger, but man, he misses so much. Mm-hmm. It's like, and then. And we took a silent, we took like a moment of silence. And then I said, he's Adam Dunn. And and the laugh, the raw joy and laughter that came out of Robert, it was like straight up uninterrupted for like 15 minutes of laughter.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, it was such a really fun moment that it was like really, it was like a really, really genuinely happy moment on that show. And it was like definitely one, like it's maybe my favorite moment doing that show with Robert.
I met Robert because my buddy Big D. Do you know Big D? Because he does the Dragon Ball stuff.
I've never met him personally. I think at most, maybe we've like exchanged, like I replied to a tweet of him and he replied to me, and that's about it.
Yeah. So anyway, so Big D, he'd been doing some shows, and he had an old website. And I think Robert may have written some articles for his website. And he was always like, hey, you know, I could reach out to Robert, because I was trying to get some articles or predictions or whatever. And Robert was always so interested in helping us. And so he'd send me some stuff about a fight that was happening. And so I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then he wanted to start writing for the website. And I was like, great, here you go. And he did all of these, like, you know, top 10 and all the different weight classes and stuff of all time. And just loved doing little projects like that. Yeah. And then when we did the podcast project, you know, he's a little bit older than me. He's probably about 10 years older than me. Actually, I think he was probably close to Mike's age, closer to Mike's age, Mike Tyson's age. And the reason why this whole thing, this, I'm glad you brought it up, is he would have hated to see this fight.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't think he would have watched it because.
No. Oh, no, he wouldn't. I think at the absolute most, what he would do, like the moment we heard the decision on the Katie Taylor and Serrano fight, he's out.
He's out. Yeah.
He's logging out. He's signing out of his account. He's deleting his account, erasing all the payment information on his account. And no trace whatsoever.
And what he would do is after every round of a big fight, he would do a little Twitter voice gimmick, and he
has
a little voice note up on Twitter about his thoughts on the round. And, you know, his voice, his big voice, his big laughter, so going to miss it. Just so people know, the OG Rob Silva, I've mentioned this before. I got a text from him one day, but it wasn't actually from him. It was from his brother saying that he had passed. And so, you know, my heart is still mending on that one. It just shocked me. And I was so sad because when I saw the text, I was like, oh, God, I haven't heard from Robert in a long time. And then I was immediately like fallen from the thing. But yeah, shout out to Robert Silva, the OG Rob Silva. When he stopped doing stuff with us, he kept doing the podcast, just doing it in a different way. And he started doing more in music and stuff, and going to miss him. This podcast, I have been influenced by his knowledge, like you said. And it got me into just reading about, just being way more interested in the sport just by being a friend of his, because he was so passionate about it. And so, I guess that's the way that we'll end this show, which is, you know, rest in peace. Or, you know, what he would always say to me is every end of every call, end of every text we ever had, he would end with these four words. So that's how I'm going to end this show. For Carlos, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Take care, big man.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.